Lend me your ears. The Oral Dramaturgies Podcast. The Salon. Conversations about sound.
Hello, and welcome to The Salon. Our guests today are habitual co-thinkers P.A. Skans and Daphne Brooks, who pick up on previous conversations on the radical potentiality of pop and rock music and of the lyric to reason together on the embodied, the sonic, and the political. Daphne A. Brooks is William R. Keenan Professor of African American Studies, American Studies, Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies, and Music at Yale University. She is the author of a number of academic publications on the 19th and 20th century African-American literary and cultural production, Black Feminist Theory, Performance and Popular Music. The first volume of her trilogy, Subterranean Blues, Black Women's Sound, Modernity, entitled Liner Notes for the Revolution, The Intellectual Life of Black Feminist Sound, is out with Harvard University Press in 2021. P.A. Skans is a reader in drama, theatre and performance at Roehampton University in London, where she also heads the Centre for Performance and Creative Exchange. Her articles include examinations of national identity, the choreography of Bill T. Jones, surtitles and contemporary theatrical performance, gift exchange and creative generosity, Shakespeare and Mabou Mines, gender and motion, the epistemology of practice as research, watching and spectatorship as praxis, and a wealth of work on sound and composition in performance. Brooks and Skans take their Salon for Lend Me Your Ears, recorded as 2020 drew to a close, as an opportunity to think about what they term sonic encouragement, to be found in music and in performance. Reasoning through a number of sound cues gathered through their personal and public experiences throughout the year, they forefront an idea of ludic solidarity in the catastrophic. This conversation took place between New York and Grosseto on the 22nd of December, 2020.
Okay.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Thank you. Happy Kwanzaa to you. What day is it?
I don't know. I tend to just take all of December for Kwanzaa. You know, I mean, why not?
Hanukkah.
It was Malanwa Karanka and his Afrocentric friends designed the holiday during the Black Arts Movement. So I figure, you know, it's a site of improvisation. But at any rate, it is good to see slash hear you in this strange.
It's so good to see slash hear you in these strange, awful times.
Yeah. A couple of Decembers ago, we were all together.
We were talking the sonorous.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And now, as our mutual dear friend Fred Moden would say, as he said to me the other night, we'll have to muddle through somehow. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, so and you know, this is fundamental to questions of the kinds of questions you and I have been talking about for a long time. But, you know, I was just in the States to visit my brother. It is just really a moment of what I want to talk a little bit about with mm-hmm. you, because you're a person that I don't have to translate to. And I think that's, you know, an interesting thing
I feel the same way. Mm-hmm.
Is the sonic, is like, I've been thinking a lot about sonic encouragement and the ways in which, and this partly comes out of the family Zooms that have been instituted since the pandemic, because like so many people, it never even occurred to us to Zoom before as a family. And as you would appreciate highly, our Zooms have come to include instructions, like one person decides the artist or the band, and then everyone has to choose three songs.
Wow, that's great. That is so great. I love it.
And it's been like reliving certain ways about how we got through, you know, to say, you know, what you're saying about Fred, how we muddle through, but also like how we move through, how we Prince through, how we Rolling Stones through, how we, you know, how we through in those ways.
Yeah, that's beautiful, PA. That's really, really beautiful. Can I leap in and say that?
Please.
I want to lift that formulation, sonic encouragement. Definitely. I want to lift it. I also want to add to our maybe little lexicon that we're building together here, sonic healing, which I've thought a lot about. And there's a song that I want to share. It's also really a particular performance. So you and I will hopefully be able to see it. The reason why I keep coming back to it actually has to do with Radiohead, which is I'm not playing Radiohead, although I could. I have some reasons why I'm not playing Radiohead.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece in for The Guardian this fall on the blackness of Radiohead. The beautiful blackness of Radiohead was the title of the piece. And that it was very important to me because Radiohead is a very important band to me. I've learned some things that I didn't know about the band in relation to BDS and the BDS movement from a couple of years ago that makes me quite sad, actually. So we can talk more about that. But they're one of my favorite bands and of all time. And, you know, I was writing about the number of Black artists who cover Radiohead. Leon LaHavis has a gorgeous, you know, right? But there's a ton, right? And I was writing about these ways in which freedom and, you know, rejection of authoritarianism has been embedded in their work for a long time.
Yeah.
Anyways, I wrote about it to mark the 20th anniversary of Kid A. And I got the most ferocious racist hate mail that I've ever gotten before in my, you know, 20 years of doing public facing writing.
Holy shit,
from across the pond, just a lot of boys who were upset. And it, you know, and of course it was in stereo with the white supremacy that has made it put itself on, you know, repeat play at high volume, especially these past 4 years, but that we know has been there. It didn't traumatize me. And I also understood the importance of not writing back to these people. There was only one person I wrote back to who actually started very innocently and then became more problematic later. But he was asking why I was capitalizing Black in my article, which is something that I've returned to doing. I have an author's note at the beginning of my book that's coming out in February where I talk about why I made that change. Yes, PA Stance had a lot to do with that book getting done in terms of ideas. So, but I didn't write to anybody back. But if I had, this is the song that I really wanted to play, just to send a link. The version of this that we're looking at is a performance the night before Otis Redding was killed in a plane crash.
Oh, God.
I can't make it through this song. I never can make it through this song. And, you know, it speaks to the core tenets of the soul music revolution. And, you know, its insistence on, you know, claiming the right to the inextricable ways that Blackness and humanity work in tandem with one another in the West and model a kind of, you know, ethics of radical care and intimacy. I just kind of thought, like, what would it mean? You know, we have what would it mean to respond to, you know, that level of spontaneous, you know, quotidian violence that I was receiving on email with a song like this. It would mean extending the tradition that MLK and Baldwin and an entire generation, my parents' generation, had really put into action on the streets to transform the United States fundamentally half a century ago. So it's a song that I come back to a lot right now as I'm watching, as we're all watching what we hope are some fundamental transitions that we urgently need in order to save ourselves. Right.
So I have a memory that goes with this song, that was an incredibly powerful performance at La Mama in New York. And the whole piece, the whole live performance piece, was was centered around someone returning again and again to a vinyl record player and playing the song. And it was because the other thing is, like, there's something really profoundly beautiful about the fact that just right now, cut off as we are from one another physically, the only thing we can do is try.
Right? Yes, that's right.
You know?
It's true. Yeah, I mean, one of the many, many just gorgeous things about this performance that I hold so dear is that it mounts struggle as a site of cathartic energy and infinite potentiality. You know? It's not an endpoint. It's always going to be the site in which we continue to make and unmake ourselves.
Yeah.
And Otis really rehearses that.
Yeah.
You know, over and over and over again in the song itself. It's the thing that I feel like we need right now.
Yep. Yeah. And it's interesting that you were talking about the responses you got from that article, which I haven't read, which means that my daily checking of The Guardian has been inadequate, Daphne Brooks.
I know.
But one of the things that's also interesting to me about that is, what does Twitter tender look like? This is precisely this whole, the history of the Black Sonic in the context of R&B, which is something I'm going to talk about, was also, for me, as you were playing that, I was thinking, it has a physical vulnerability. It has always had a physical vulnerability. And you know, with all of the caveats about how we all know that this is about performance and an outside, at the same time, there's something of the body offered always.
Yes.
And it's not a cue, but when I had been thinking about talking to you, which is such a fun thing to do, I had been thinking also that while I was finding my, what I was deciding on, I was listening to the beginning. I'm obsessed with Barry White being exactly like Falstaff.
I love you.
And so one of the things about the opening of the You'll Never Find opening, right?
Yes.
Is that circular ba-da-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-da-dum at the opening of it. And I thought, I could just live in that circle. Like if someone would just establish that circle, that would be a place to dwell for a while.
Yes.
Because it just feels like there's something, you know, powerful. So sonic encouragement comes from, and I think actually I just will go ahead also and share my screen because she's wearing a great mini skirt and I'm sure you've seen this.
Okay. Can I say one more thing, PA2, I wanna also flag not only that Otis has been important to me in facing, you know, white supremacist everyday violence, but also in understanding, you know, our pandemic lives, that, you know, the key to saving ourselves is to be tender with one another. And it's such a basic need that we all should demand and that everyone should be welcome to.
Yes, so, I completely agree.
In that place of dwelling that you just referenced. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this was what made me, and this was, again, it comes, my life right now is very much engaged in sort of things so it was my brother who showed me this for the first time because I'd never seen it. And I literally sat in Texas on a Saturday night hanging out with my family and thought, oh, I really want to play this for Daphne and talk about this. So let me share. There's a whole tradition, like in this, in Southernness itself, and then in Black church tradition, but also, you know, any kind of Southern tradition of helping people along sonically while they're doing things, right?
Yep.
So I love the ease and the virtuosity when Aretha says things like, do you really? You know, I was thinking about the time we're living in, and I was thinking, it's like one of those disaster movies where we've got to go over some impossibly small rope bridge that's not going to hold us. And the crevice is unbelievably deep. And it's her voice saying, sing it, Smokey, that like gets you to the next part of the bridge, right?
Yeah, come on. You know? That's the antiphonal, right? The radical antiphonal, call and response.
And also that kind of, like, it, for me with the Aretha, it's like she's giving voice, and this is, of course, you know, partly in my background about thinking about Shakespeare and R&B, but it's as if she's giving voice to a few things, to a few things, right? But she has an entire like sonnet behind that thing, right? She's, I mean, we're not hearing every line of the sonnet. We're just hearing the like what comes out as she's putting the microphone to her mouth going towards Smokey, right?
Right. But
I just thought, what would it mean if we could know how to have that kind of, to use the word that you've brought up with Otis, that kind of tender patter, right? With one another.
Yeah.
And I've so often thought about this in the extremities of the academic, where people give their talks in this silence. I mean, obviously this doesn't happen everywhere, but I've often thought, you know, what would it mean if we were constantly saying things like "You go, girl," right? As people were saying really interesting lines, right?
Because
it's, you know, it has to be repressed. When I'm listening to really interesting people, I have to repress. Sure. I mean, often I don't.
Right. Yeah. Which we love about you, PA. Stevie is the prophet of love and preaches love as, you know, one of the core tenets of his repertoire. But I again, to keep going with this notion of tenderness, I just started to think about the distinctions between love and tenderness. They're entwined with one another. But I think that tenderness is a gestural action as well as, that anyone can access. It does not require that kind of deep study and history to be able to cultivate a kind of foundation of love. We should love our strangers. This is something that across religions we've been taught. But you can have tenderness immediately at your disposal without that kind of history of intimacy. And so I guess that's why I was just like, oh my God, that's such a radical idea to be able to think about that as how we put ourselves together each day in relation to each other, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we should be able to reach deeper for love of humanity, right? But if we can start with just tenderness, right? As being in our equipment for living, as Ralph Ellison would say, via Kenneth Burke or vice versa, we'd be in much better shape. That was really, that clip was extraordinary and great to see. I will pull up a clip that I went to quite a bit, especially early in our 2020 dumpster fire. And it's part of a, I will reveal that it's part of a playlist that I was asked to build as the revolution was unfolding this summer. And Princeton, my former place of employment, was putting together this kind of online thing through Princeton Concerts where people did playlists. And so I agreed to do it. I think Black folks got called upon to do a lot of commentator kind of activism, more labor on our part.
But also like white people work harder.
Right, I know. And so I had to choose. We all had to pick and choose what we were going to do. And I thought, well, you know, this is a playlist for the moment. Sure, I'm always willing to do that. This is a track that it only recently came into my life. I'd say in the past few years, I did not know about Pastor T.L. Barrett, who's still with us. And based in Chicago. But he made this album in the early 70s. He made several albums with his Youth for Christ choir. And he just straddles the realm between soul and R&B and the gospel elixir that is all of those things, the sacred content and the the secular forms, he's able to mix it all together in really extraordinary ways. So let me play a little bit of this. That's what I wrote about this. The mighty pastor Thomas Lee Baird Jr. leads his majestic choir through a dazzling rereading of the classic African-American spiritual Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen. Baird's reimagining of the sacred lament leans into a gospel R&B groove that burrows deep into stubborn determination and fortitude, carrying us through the valley of despair and ultimately moving you towards the light of glory sounded out by the incandescent voices in each ensemble. A stirring combination of black struggle and grievance, resilience and revivification, all bound up in one more riveting performance. You know, God bless my mom's 94 years strong, knocking wood.
Yeah.
Heading into her ophthalmologist appointment out in Palo Alto, California later this morning. But yeah, I think one of the last times I saw her, we were home in Berkeley, first week of February. And I can't remember if it was that visit or the one right before in December, but I always take her to her little spa appointment, get her nails done. And we were in the car and I put the song on and she looked at me and said, "Who is this?" I said, "It's Pastor T.L. Baird." She's like, "Well, Lord have mercy, you'd need to send me a copy of this. This is something else." So, yeah, I think, you know, this is a stop you in your tracks kind of performance. And I just think that there is a way that he's working in several different affective registers.
Absolutely.
Right? To sort of play with that combination of, that African-American combination of catastrophe and radical ludic pleasure, right? In the face of catastrophe. I want to be very careful with that formulation.
No, but one of the things that I always get so bent out of joint, ex-Catholic that I am, is the idea that the ludic can only come out of the catastrophic. And yet, you know, I'm willing to believe that people who have a talent for the ludic become even more talented in the catastrophic.
Yes. Yeah. Well, right. That's the Black radical tradition, right?
Exactly.
There. So, yeah.
But the other thing I love about this, Daphne, I mean, not only is it just incredible to listen to, but what a great thing to put on your playlist for the revolution. Because the other thing about that song is that, of course, it's a church song. Mm-hmm. So, of course, choirs sing it. But I think it's often been offered as a very solitary song. Right?
Yes.
The I in the lyric is a very powerful, nobody knows the trouble I've seen.
Yes.
But because that choir starts that verse.
That's right. That's right.
That I becomes we in a really powerful
That's right. Way. That's right. That's right. And that's, you know, John Coltrane, you know, once said, you know, we hear the we and their I, you know, in reference to blues performance. And Hazel Carby has in her germinal study of Black women musicians, blues icons, references that line at the end of her essay. You know, we hear the we in their eye. So absolutely, yeah.
I'm sure you had this experience, the 10th exponential, but I was talking with a friend in the midst of the heightening of the revolution this summer, and the experience people had of suddenly hearing from their white friends and who are like, you know, tell me what it is I should be doing.
Right.
And I think one of the things that's interesting for me, and my favorite word of the revolution was dismantle. And not least because it's an Audre Lorde word for me, that whole process of what it means to, you know, just to go back to sonic encouragement, what it also means not to be the lead singer, right?
Yes.
I think, you know, this is one of the things that's going to be the big question around real radical. I mean, I think the U.S. has a much, in my experience with the U.K., mm-hmm. I think the U.S. has much more experience with really delving mm-hmm. into questions of white supremacy within the academy. Mm-hmm. The UK mm-hmm. is definitely, you know, I'm of course right. accepting some of your very good friends in the UK, but in general, in UK, in my experience in the UK, for me, this is going to be the big question is, as I was saying to a friend recently, if you write again and again about your position as a white person, mm-hmm. it feels to me when I'm reading it, I think that seems like you're still the center of the universe. It's just right. now you're apologizing for being.
Right. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
the question mm-hmm. is, what does it actually mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and this goes straight to the sonic. What does it mm-hmm. actually mean to listen? Mm-hmm. What does it actually mean to learn from the women who your new book, which I cannot wait mm-hmm. to hold in my hands, is addressing in it, you know, as I know will be in revolutionary ways.
Mm. One of the things that I can say that's outside of confidentiality that we've talked about on the ground at my institution is with some of the hegemonic departments who've been here since the beginning is to actually engage in conversations about what does intellectual humility look like?
Ooh, yeah.
You know, right. And
yeah.
it's not a hard question. It shouldn't be because, you know, if we go back to the basics of what study involves, right, it does involve and necessitate a certain level of humility conjoined with curiosity, right? And those are yep. two things that yep. are often missing from academic life,
indeed.
Strangely enough, right? And yet we know that the history of ensemblic jazz performance, as our greatest thinkers have shown us, mm-hmm. involves humility and curiosity. You know, one of my favorite pieces by Albert Murray, Improvisation and the Creative Process, which he originally delivered, I believe, as a lecture for a conference at the great Robert O'Mealy at Columbia, you know, designed the jazz studies program that's, yeah. you know, two decades plus strong there in their great community at Columbia. Yeah. He had this conference that ended up becoming the basis for the collection, The Jazz Cadence of American Culture. And Albert Murray really, you know, he talks at length about just the kind of equipment for living that one needs to participate in any kind of a jazz performance, right? Yeah. And we know yeah. this from Invisible Man, from his best yeah. friend, Ralph Ellison, right? That yeah. you have to go on a journey through reclaiming all of that history and knowledge or being open to it and open to obtaining that knowledge in order to play along, right? Mm-hmm. And if we had a little bit more of that kind of an approach within the modern academy, I think we'd have just a more dynamic and ethical way
yes.
Of being together.
And also, I think, you know, the financialization of the university
yes.
has meant that students come to us
right.
for either a stamp that says they've been in a, you know, mm-hmm. they've been in a something and they've come to the end of it.
Right.
Not anything about discovery. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing is that what comes with that is an absolute, it's like, you know, student satisfaction is based on you never confusing them. How can mm-hmm. that be possible?
Right, right, like, right. You know, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What mm-hmm. is curiosity? But the result, the happy result, the willing and humble result of confusion, of mm-hmm. the process right. of discovery, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's one of the things that, you know, I saw that change. You could see that change of it coming to this point of students feeling like they should not show that they don't know.
Right.
And, you know, and that, I mean, to me, like if there is anything out of, you know, what has just been a season mm-hmm. of awfulness, one of the possibilities is, let's say that nothing works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So having said that, let's say mm-hmm. that the only and I say this to my art students all the time, the most important thing right now, as you go into this as young people, as you go into, in fact, change a white supremacist theater culture, is that nothing has worked. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the only thing you can use is your imagination. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. to me, like right. that, and you know, we go back to the business about encouragement, because mm-hmm. for me, that's also profoundly part mm-hmm. of the process of the moment in which, and it goes back to what you just played us, because mm-hmm. when we rely on one superhero to do our mm-hmm. work,
right,
that person gets exhausted,
right,
and eventually, you know, and eventually dragged down by their own human, you know, human foibles.
Yes.
So yeah. we have to spell mm-hmm. each other. We have mm-hmm. to be able to give each other space to come in and go out.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I have one.
Can I say one thing just in response to that? But that's the other piece of this then is humility. We've got humility, curiosity, but also generosity, right? You're talking about giving each other the space to come in and out. And that is, that's also tied to tenderness, right? As to give each other the space that we need to be able to grow and to imagine that we can, there is a possibility to transform ourselves, you know?
I will share one more thing, but I'm going to embarrass you.
Hey, you're, no, oh, you yeah, don't want to do that. I'm still totally drinking coffee.
Drink that coffee.
Yeah.
So I'm only going to embarrass you because one of the pleasures of waiting for your book was reading the blurbs about your book.
Oh my God, P, I can't believe you're doing that.
I am doing it. And the reason I'm doing it, but there's a very, very specific reason I'm doing it. And that is that one of the things that's important to me is that your work, beyond what your work is doing in terms of completely new ways of understanding, which have certainly changed the way I understand and listen. Mm. But I think the other thing is that many people who respond to the work are immediately talking about how, and this is from, of all things, Kirkus, right? Which is not like who I would have, but this is from a Kirkus review, a spirited study. I mean, spirited, we could talk about that, but we won't. I am going to do it. A spirited study of how Black women musicians and writers have informed each other despite gatekeepers' neglect and dismissals. A sui generis. And as soon as I saw sui generis, I thought, no, just a generous. And that's an essential work on Black music to launch future investigations. And that's the thing, Daph. I mean, you know, that's what the work is for.
Yes.
That's when I was thinking about sonic encouragement, like that's you in the Aretha moment of this extraordinary work you're doing that's going to allow us to get to the next part of the bridge, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and it is about generosity. It's totally about generosity. Mm-hmm. And happily, no longer embarrassing you, my other sonic quote is also about generosity.
Fantastic.
It's very short. Okay.
Yeah.
You have.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to play that again because it pleases me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to say what it is so people know?
Yeah.
So good.
So this is what I call Bootsian pentameter. Mm. I've never ever known how to work Audacity, but I was so taken with the idea that the way Bootsy Collins from Parliament Funk and other things says yeah, that, and I suddenly thought, wait, like if there are five of those, that's pentameter.
Oh my God.
So I'm this calling it Bootsy and pentameter.
You know, but I mean, the thing that always thrills me about UPA as a model, right? And we think about what we can model for others to carry on and extend beyond the work that we're doing. And so I appreciate it, even though, right, still mortified, but I appreciated what you were able to draw out of that review that is again, equipment for living. And that is that your innovative experimentation and your recourse to invention is always put forth in such a way that it does inspire others to kind of to have to think counterintuitively. If you're talking about Shakespeare and R&B, it is about breaking the rules, so to speak, in order for us to, you know, build something new. And that's what we should constantly be doing in order to save ourselves. So I appreciate that so much. I'm going to give you two more tracks then. I think we have just a little more time left, if you're okay with this. And it's helpful for a lot of reasons. I hope it's helpful to me, because one of the things that, and the book that I do is I did this actually in my protest music class. And at first my students were resistant to it. And then they came along with me. My protest music in the Black radical tradition class included a fair amount of white artists. So, you know, like Dylan, and you know, so Usual Suspects, but to them not usual,
right?
Even, you know, someone who people presume to be white, who I didn't think of as white, Eddie Van Halen. We talked about him when he passed. And but the point was to remind each other of what it means to recognize one Blackness, as our friend, our dear friend Fred always reminds us, is something that is so fundamental to not only our experience of the West, but how the West was made and how it will be unmade, how it can perpetually be unmade.
Yes.
And to engage in these ideas about liberation in ways that have to be shared with our white allies, and that our white allies have to have buy-in. And so there are white feminist thinkers in my book who are complicated, but who are so crucial to figuring out a kind of collaborative way forward, even in our failures, towards being able to affirm our shared condition with one another. Okay, so the first one is from, for me, one of the albums of the year.
Okay.
Except with way more gravity than when we started off. When you resist me, hon, I cease.
You know, I know we're running short on time. I want to be able to pull up two of my white sisters. But I will say about this child, I'll always think of her as a revolutionary child. Ever since she came on the MTV Awards during the season of her debut album Title, which would have been 97 or so. And she quoted Maya Angelou. And I was like, who is this white child? Because as Maya Angelou would say, I'm like, wow. You know, 97. The genius Gen X songwriter Fiona Apple writes epic sonic manifestos about feminist interiority and all its dense complexity and steeped in roiling emotions. One of the late Denimois tracks on her masterpiece of an album, 2020's Fetch the Boat Cutters, Cosmonauts, swirling piece of pop enchantment, the tale of real and sturdy romantics facing cosmic struggles. How do you suppose that we'll survive? Apple asks of her lover before leaning into the certainty that you and I will be like a couple of cosmonauts, except with way more gravity than we started off. The anthem to carry us through our times and into a galaxy of possibility. I love pairing this with Pastor T.L. Barrett too, because she moves into this, you know, just raucous, ensemblic, crescendo. And it felt especially hopeful and comforting when it came out in early pandemic, just to hear Fiona both doing her hardcore solo out on the edge stuff, but then moving in and out of being with the crowd, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible.
And thrilling to the crowd.
Also, I was trying to think, you know, I was thinking to myself, wow. So I mean, obviously, we, you know, to speak Bowie's name is just a pleasure anyway. But I was thinking of futurism, and I was thinking of how, you'll pardon the pun, but it's kind of pale a lot of times in white hands or in white mouths or in white lyrics, but that's extraordinary.
It's I'm very moved by this work and by what she gives to us in the way of thinking about collectivity, right, through her single vision. Here's the other, this is an oldie but a goodie. It's from The Edge of the 21st Century. My girl from across the pond, one of my favorites of all time. At the dawn of the 21st century, English post-punk warrior P.J. Harvey recorded a love letter album to New York City, Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea, a rock and roll feminist flaneur's take on the emotive volatility of modern life and motion. The exquisite climax to all that maelstrom, We Float, her parting message on that album is one of both existential reckoning and ethereal wonder. We float, croons Harvey, take life as it comes. 20 years on.
Oh my God.
He sings the soundtrack to our 2020 quarantine life. We'll float, PA.
we'll float. We will. I mean, you know, I was thinking, because I didn't say this about the Aretha Smokey, and it's yet another Shakespeare and R&B connection, but one of the things that I love is the easy promise of desperation, that I will do anything. And one of the things that's so interesting is listening to different forms of how we get there from here, right? Because each of the things that we've listened to, it takes us in a different way. You know, it doesn't all have to be that kind of gloriously, you know, for me, sweep of Eno Barbas and Anthony and Cleopatra exaggeration of, you know, if you can't even imagine how great this is, so I'll just be talking about how it's so great it's unimaginable. To a kind of, let's hold this time. I mean, this is such a bracketed song. It's such a bracket of you know, of that space of will, you know, the floating space as, I don't know, as a space together, you know, which, I agree with extraordinary.
Well, when you float, you have to move tenderly through the world.
No kidding.
Right.
No kidding. No. And when you can just imagine, I mean, I can just imagine fingers again being able to touch each other, right?
Yes.
You know, which is, I mean, I have friends in this pandemic who live by themselves. And one of them said to me, I haven't been hugged in 6 months.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, you can die of coronavirus or you can die of isolation. You can die of anything, you know.
Yes.
And yet there's ways in which, going back to the beginning of talking about my family and Zoom and music, these, and for me, and I just want to say again, like the power of the joy I have in your work is the claiming, and I thank you for what you said about my work, because to me, it's claiming the saying, listen, if you don't think this is thinking, you're not thinking.
Yeah.
You
know? Yes.
Like, I'm done with you. I don't want to hear, like, you know, it's not, or it's blah, or it's blah. If you don't think this is thinking, then, you know, you need to go and study.
Well, I mean, our Black feminist pioneers taught us that, from Audre, who you name checked, to my late great mentor, Barbara Christian.
Yeah.
And the Race for Theory reminds us that Black folks have been doing theory since the boat touched the soil here.
Yeah. And who was the person who changed my life, because at an MLA, she said, how can I write about Toni Morrison with words that are so ugly? And I thought, yeah, you know what? I'm done with those words.
There you go.
I want to play. I want to think about words that are as beautiful as the words I'm reading. How can that is a form of tender criticism that's really interesting to me.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's really true. And really, maybe that's where the notes come in, right? Mm. That's where the notes can pick up where words don't go, as our friend Fred would say. Yeah. All right, you all. Is that a wrap?
That's a wrap.
You've been listening to Lend Me Your Ears, presented by Duška Radosavljević, curated by Flora Petrolo, and produced by Tim Dano. The Lend Me Your Ears podcast is part of Oral Dramaturgies, an AHRC leadership fellowship held by Duška Radosavljević at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama.